Growth and innovation. Two words that best describe the ETF industry. However, rapid growth and innovation creates a critical need for financial advisors and industry practitioners education. Enter the ETF Institute, the first and only independent organization providing industry professionals and financial advisors with certification, education, and training on ETFs. Learn more about the Certified ETF Advisor designation by visiting cetf.org.
ETF Prime is hosted by Nate Geraci, president of investment advisory firm, The ETF Store. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. Investing in ETFs involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Any past performance figures discussed are not necessarily indicative of future results. Some guests appearing on this program may also be financial sponsors of ETF Prime. The ETF Store is not affiliated with VettaFi or any of its affiliates. VettaFi's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or indication by VettaFi of the value of any ETF Store product or service. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate will help you get up to date with what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
All right, joining me will be Andrew Mattock, portfolio manager at Matthews Asia, who launched their first ETF less than 2 years ago. Already, they're up to 12 ETFs, about $350 million in assets. And as you can gather by the firm's name, they do specialize in investing in Asia and emerging markets. They've been doing this for well over 30 years. Now, back in January, they launched two new ETFs, the Matthews Emerging Markets Discovery Active ETF, ticker MEMS, and then the Matthews China Discovery Active ETF, ticker MCHS. This discovery suite is really geared towards smaller companies across emerging markets in China. They're attempting to uncover lesser-known companies they believe may be undervalued. And so this should be an interesting conversation because we're going to get into all of this. We'll talk about the specific investment expertise of Matthews Asia and why they decided to get involved in ETFs. We'll take a look at that new Discovery Active ETF suite. And then we're going to drill down specifically into China, which I think many investors are struggling with right now, because you're talking about the world's second largest economy, which I think makes it very difficult to ignore. But there are some real concerns regarding things like China's property market and banking system, and certainly geopolitical concerns with Taiwan and their relationship with Russia and those sorts of things. So again, I'll get into all of this with Andrew. Should be a great conversation. Now, to start this week, I have on the line with me Zeno Mercer, Senior Research Analyst at VettaFi. And look, much has been made over the past few months regarding the debut of spot Bitcoin ETFs, right? I've been leading the parade here. And then, of course, we have this upcoming decision on spot Ether ETFs in May, when the SEC has a deadline to approve or deny these. But I've said for a while, I think crypto ETFs are really just a first step down the path towards the full tokenization of securities. So the way to think about this is, instead of tokens or crypto assets being wrapped in securities like Bitcoin now is in ETFs, I think the long game here is actually the opposite, where securities will be, I guess you could say, wrapped in crypto, right? That's the tokenization. And we got some interesting news on this front last week from the largest asset manager in the world. So Zeno and I are going to chat about that now.
Now we're joined by the experts at Vettafi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
The cyclicality is kind of being upended by those nearshoring and rearshoring trends that we're seeing in America. We've got the enabling technologies and the most promising applications of those technologies.
Zeno, welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Good to be on. You're right on the money with the tokenization, and this really is the tip of the iceberg with where many people who have been following crypto, blockchain, whatever you really want to call it, space for a while now, that people have always been interested in the kind of tokenization of assets and the securitization going and vice versa. So yeah, let's chat.
Yeah, and just for listeners, among other areas, of course, one of your areas of expertise is blockchain technology. And as I was just noting, there was some pretty interesting news on this topic last week, which was that BlackRock, who of course is the world's largest ETF issuer, largest asset manager in the world, they have partnered with Securitize Markets to launch a tokenized money market fund on the Ethereum blockchain. So the fund is the BlackRock U.S. Dollar Institutional Digital Liquidity Fund, ticker BUIDL. This holds cash, T-bills, repo agreements. And look, there are several angles I want to cover on this, but I guess first, do you want to explain what's going on here for the novice? Like what does this actually mean to tokenize a fund like this in layman's terms?
Yeah, so it's not that much different from how things work. It's just a little faster and more liquid, but just kind of going to the guts of it, tokenizing an asset really means wrapping it up, putting these, verifying these assets are within a fund so you can kind of spin them up really easily. So it's a much easier way to spin up and build these products. Money market funds are a really easy low-hanging fruit of asset tokenization. They're fungible. Treasury, all these things are basically interchangeable. And it's not like this is necessarily a new thing in general. The DeFi community has already been building tokenized assets that are collateralized for years now. I mean, look at MakerDAO. I mean, you don't have to look at it now, but MakerDAO has DAI. They have multi-collateralized instruments that are stable. We've already seen yield farming, which kind of blew up last year and put a sour taste in people's mouths. But I'm sure that a company like BlackRock has been looking at this for some time. And it wasn't really de-risked from a regulatory standpoint until we saw ETFs being approved. Because otherwise, before that, it was kind of like a shaky ground to have a base on. I think that base that you've been covering very well is there. Now I think you're going to start seeing interesting moves that are at the crossover. So effectively, they are bundling these repos, these cash and treasuries, into a liquid money market asset, which I think at the moment you have to be on the Securitize app. But if you have, so it's for high net worth or other institutions, 25 million in assets, and it requires a minimum investment of 5 million. But this allows you to get the stable asset that accrues interest. This also gets rid of, T plus one. I mean, that's kind of the part of this. It also is very transparent. You can actually see the flows. This is on a public blockchain. It doesn't necessarily reveal the party, and so kind of privacy versus transparency is always a battle that we're going to face. But yeah, so effectively you can get a money market fund really easily, and I think they're going to keep growing this. This is also a tip of a new iceberg of asset tokenization.
You mentioned areas like getting rid of T plus one settlement and greater transparency. What are some of the other potential benefits of asset tokenization? And if you want, you can take this in steps, maybe, specifically with this BlackRock fund, which I think you touched on pretty well, but maybe more importantly, longer term, what are some of the potential benefits moving forward? Why could tokenization be a good thing longer term?
Right. So, I mean, I think we're not even really at T plus one. We're just getting there. So crypto has already been at T plus however many confirmations it takes on the network to verify this by kind of this public watchdog, if you will, or oracles of truth that are basically just, the network itself, self-corrects and monitors itself. So it's already way ahead of the game of how traditional markets work from that standpoint. You'll also be able so transactions can be faster. You'll be able to fractionalize ownership, lower minimum investment. So right now they have $25 million, but effectively you could get to a point where these like really complex instruments are available in something like a savings account. And you might not even, you know, this might be a hot take, but you might not need to hold USD to have liquidity in the future. You could have, you know, kind of multi-assets that represent this. So this will allow, I think, eventually more democratization of complex instruments. And of course, that there's even within asset tokenization, you have, you know, fungible assets like treasuries and other instruments like that. You also can get things like real estate and other types of assets that are a little bit more complicated because you actually have to interact more with the real world, more third parties, legal. There are lots of players working on this, but it's a little bit more complicated. So this really is kind of a new ground where we're seeing the convergence of kind of traditional finance and new finance. So yep. You also have a global 24/7 market. Crypto doesn't sleep. Blockchain doesn't sleep. You can make transactions at any point in time as long as there's any liquidity. So, of course, they're going to try to build that liquidity base. Also, theoretically, you could build smart contracts on Ethereum network. So you could reduce compliance and automation costs by having this part automated, which could make it even more reduce even more friction in the way this operates.
Yeah, and I want to make the point, Zeno, you know, it's interesting because I know some of our listeners will hear this conversation and probably rightfully be a little bit skeptical. Some of this just seems so pie in the sky, but there's a couple things that I would point out. First of all, BlackRock is not the only major fund company getting involved here. I want to ask you about WisdomTree in a moment, but Franklin Templeton also offers a tokenized money market fund. It's the Franklin On-Chain U.S. Government Money Fund, ticker FOBXX. That already has about $325 million in assets, and I know it's now supported on Ethereum via Polygon. If you go back to, I believe it was in January, think about the comments from BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, where he was very clear. He said, look, crypto ETFs are just stepping stones to full tokenization. He said on CNBC, he believes, I want to read this quote, quote, ETFs are step one in the technological revolution in the financial markets. Step two is going to be the tokenization of every financial asset. So again, here you have the CEO of the world's largest asset manager making a comment like that. I think that's important for people to think about. Is this going to happen tomorrow? Of course not. This is something that's going to play out over a period of time. But at a very basic level, I thought you did a great job of laying out some of the potential benefits of asset tokenization. But I think people should just go back and think about the fact that we used to have paper stock certificates, right, to track ownership.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what this will ultimately do, in my opinion, is you're cutting out various intermediaries. And by doing so, you do have cost savings and efficiencies, and there are benefits around transparency. You mentioned a 24/7, 365 day a year market, those sorts of things. So I guess my message is this is something that I believe is coming, which is why I'm covering it. One thing I do want to ask you is from a crypto asset perspective, I would love to have you explain how actual crypto assets might benefit from tokenization, because I'll tell you, I've had some people out on Twitter sort of fire back at my comments around this, and they're basically saying that I'm conflating crypto with the underlying blockchain technology. Because I've kind of tongue-in-cheek said that if you think crypto is a scam, you might want to consider why BlackRock is tokenizing funds on the Ethereum blockchain. And so people will say that I'm conflating crypto with the underlying blockchain technology. But my question for you is, doesn't it stand to reason that something like what BlackRock is doing, and if we play this forward, couldn't that benefit Ether itself over the long term? Or am I missing something here? Or you can talk about other crypto assets on other blockchains.
Well, certainly in this instance, if there are more demand for the underlying holdings and they're actually operating on the Ethereum network, which is kind of like a operating system that also in itself is an asset, then yeah, the Ethereum should benefit from increased attention, utilization, especially if these things grow and the network and utilization grows. Obviously, there are there are other blockchains, not just ones that are traded, and private blockchains where you have different trusted parties that are able to operate in ways that compete or are superior to the way that things are done right now, just kind of like global remittances and things like that. But I would say, just kind of backing up, you're right. It's governments that are looking into this. There are other banks like HSBC, Deutsche Bank, others have tokenized assets. People are looking at debt instruments. I mentioned this was kind of first of the kind. I want to kind of clarify more so in the U.S. because we've actually kind of been held up compared to some other parts of the globe due to, our, for better or for worse, strict SEC and other requirements that have, obviously, we've seen flip-flop a little bit. Now they're trying to go after Ethereum themselves, but I don't think, it's going to be hard to have a case after they've approved other products, so they're just kind of looking a little foolish right now. It does stand to reason that kind of some of these crypto assets in general, and just, I would say, alternative assets or alternative digital assets, maybe another hot take, but Generation Alpha being born and coming up today might not ever use traditional, financial banks as they exist today. It's such a digital native. They are going to be so digitally native. These assets are already, Bitcoin's already over 10 years old by the time they're born. So if you think about it, this kind of hybrid custody, sovereign custody, the way assets are collateralized, like it's, all these things are going to be there before they're, before they even grow up and have their own bank account. So I think if you imagine where things are heading over the next 5-10 years, they're going to be used to a world where assets are collateralized and tokenized. That won't seem unusual to them. Just like, people that were on the gold standard switched to the USD were probably a little weirded out at first, and we just kind of had to roll with it. This is kind of the next iteration of how money and the way value is stored and transferred is going. It's inherently superior, and a lot of it actually has to tie into with kind of advances that are happening in hardware and software. I mean, if we did not have hardware and software that could authenticate the individuals, secure these transactions, we wouldn't have digital banking. And digital banking could be seen as kind of a gateway drug or like a bridge to, being able to do digital autonomous transactions, both for enterprises and individual peer-to-peer or, through a network like PayPal or Coinbase or some of these other platforms, or Prime, as you mentioned, that's WisdomTree's kind of look into that. They're all realizing that there's a kind of a new kind of like digital wallet or super app appearing. I mean, even Elon Musk, going back to his PayPal days, has been interested in kind of these digital wallets and peer-to-peer. And, he's working on building his own digital wallet network on X. So there's a lot of players that are trying to be a part of this, and it will take time, but it does seem that kind of superior user experience and offerings, while maintaining absolute trust and security, are going to be paramount.
Yeah, it's just funny to me because you'll hear occasionally that crypto has no use cases, right? And just think about what you walked through there and think about the types of companies that are getting involved and ask yourself, if they think that there are no use cases here, somebody like BlackRock, and that's not to say that there aren't garbage crypto tokens out there. Of course there are. And there are some scams in the space. You got to look above that. I think you could look at any industry, especially an emerging industry, and maybe see some things going on that are, less than optimal, some shenanigans going on, but I think you got to look at
the establishment is
right.
Get lots of lawsuits for taking advantage. I mean, you've got a misaligned platform that exists. I mean, every platform in a capitalist society is looking to find ways. People find ways to make money, and if the user is a consumer, an individual, like they're going to try to find ways to make money. They're not just doing this all for free. There's cost involved. And a lot of tokenization and the way that these are being developed run it, operate at less cost, require less overhead. And it's just kind of, it makes sense that why a lot of these players are aiming and gunning to be and be a front runner into this, because if they don't, they'll be playing catch up.
Yeah, I've mentioned WisdomTree a couple of times today, and on that note, I've talked about these comments on the podcast in the past, but WisdomTree CEO Jonathan Steinberg, he had said that, this maybe was like a year or two ago, he said that, quote, ETFs are almost 30 years old now. I think the next 30 years, you're going to be talking about regulated tokens. It's going to prove to be the new wrapper. And then he also said that, quote, I believe over the next 5 years, we will be recognized as a DeFi business that has an ETF business. Or said a different way, we're in the business of transparent exposures, whether we're doing it in regulated tokens or through ETFs. I think that's pretty amazing to hear from a current top 10 ETF issuer. And I'm sure you saw this, but last week, WisdomTree also announced that they've been granted a charter from the New York State Department of Financial Services to operate as a limited purpose trust company under the New York bank law. And this trust company charter, I'll just read this. So it, quote, authorizes WisdomTree to perform fiduciary custody of digital assets, including digital wallet services, to issue and exchange DFS-approved stablecoins and manage stablecoin reserves under the newly formed entity, which is WisdomTree Digital Trust Company. And they have this offering, WisdomTree Prime, where they're already offering several digital funds. They have a tokenized gold fund and a dollar fund. There's some equity funds out there. You can also just buy Bitcoin and Ether. I don't know. Have you had a chance to take a look at that?
I haven't, but I mean, this just reminds me that, you know, just for people listening and trying to understand where I'm coming from, I was consulting 5 years ago, and I was working in the space. And one of the things, you know, under NDA, but one of the projects was basically tokenizing a very large asset and working with an investment bank to do that for their client. You know, these are things that have been, and Securitize was one of the partners that we would have worked with if the project had moved forward. It was a little bit complicated from a global standpoint, but and regulatory standpoint, but you know, these ideas have been sitting around for a while. It's amazing to see these major institutions and players that have kind of been quiet or even been disparaging of it actually jumping on board. I mean, this is quite the paradigm shift. And exactly, I hadn't seen or heard that yet. I'm going to have to dig in, given that I am also in New York. I think it'd be interesting to meet and hear what they're doing. But this really is a paradigm shift, and we're actually at that tipping point where people have been kind of looking at and waiting for this to happen for a while and building. I mean, the Securitize team has been at this for a long time now. So that's impressive that they've not only held on through a lot of bull and bear markets and, you know, naysayers, but they're now partnered with some of the top financial institutions in the world.
Zeno, just a couple of minutes left here. From an investment perspective, and obviously we're not here to offer specific investment advice, right? But you had mentioned earlier, obviously, the advances in software and hardware and some of the platforms. I'm curious, are there any specific companies that you think could be well positioned to benefit from this move towards tokenization? And maybe you could even touch on some of the blockchain ETFs out there where they're owning, I'm assuming, some of these companies that could stand to benefit. I don't know if you have any thoughts on specific companies or just the broader blockchain ETFs.
Sure. I mean, there's not as many. A lot of the players in this space have rightfully been private. So some of that exposure would be on the private side. Obviously, some of these companies that are getting involved from a kind of technical or actually financial layer. I mean, you've got BlackRock and other players that are actually spearheading and being a front runner here. So I would say that they are in a better position than the companies that are not doing it. Obviously, there is an interesting, you know, like what does this mean for business models of the future in financial services? I think that's a question that no one really has an answer to right now, how they position themselves to be a part of this. I would say just in general, just the way things are heading right now, increased cybersecurity identification, those are very important, connectivity, networking. That's already the path we were already on to accomplish, I mean, this path of more automation and more frictionless kind of finance. It's hard to say specific names. I mean, you've got traditionally the known names like Coinbase, et cetera, but others that are involved in tokenization, there aren't as many on the public side right now. I would say a lot of them are private. But, you know, there's also some ETFs that have exposure across the stack. You've got, you know, Block. You've got, you know, Amplify. Bitwise, you know, Global X has a blockchain ETF. I'm not going to lie. I haven't spent much time looking at what's in them. You might know what's more inside than I do right now. I focus, as you know, more kind of on the AI and robotics side. So, but this is an area that I always keep an eye on. So definitely something, now that things are kind of really heating up and getting interesting, I'm going to spend more time and get back up on what's happening there.
Yeah, that would be a good topic for us to dive into in the future. I mean, there are some real differences between those blockchain ETFs. Obviously, a lot of them do own some of the publicly traded crypto miners, but there are some differences in composition. So, yeah, we'll definitely have to dig back into that. Zeno, always enjoy having you on the podcast. Really interesting topic. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. See ya.
That was Zeno Mercer, Senior Research Analyst at VettaFi.
Looking to unlock uncapped upside from largest and most recognized NASDAQ 100 names, bolstered by the potential income and diversification benefits of bonds? Look to ticker CANQ. The Calamos Alternative NASDAQ and Bond ETF. CanQ delivers options-based exposure to NASDAQ 100 stocks, combining the risk mitigation and income benefits of a fixed income foundation. Upside NASDAQ 100 potential, manageable downside risk, while seeing monthly income along the way. That's a ticker worth researching. Demand more from your NASDAQ equity allocation. Explore ticker CanQ, the Calamos Alternative NASDAQ and Bond ETF. To learn more about CanQ, visit calamos.com/CanQ. Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Please see the prospectus and summary prospectus containing this and other information, which can be obtained by calling 1-866-363-9219. Read it carefully before investing. An investment in the fund is subject to risks, and you could lose money on your investment in the funds. There can be no assurance that the funds will achieve its investment objective. Your investment in the fund is not a deposit in a bank and is not insured or guaranteed by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or any other government agency. The risks associated with an investment in the fund can increase during times of significant market volatility. More detailed information regarding these risks can be found in the fund's prospectus. NASDAQ and NASDAQ 100 are registered trademarks of NASDAQ Inc., distributed by Calamos Financial Services LLC.
I'm now joined by Andrew Mattock, Portfolio Manager at Matthews Asia, who currently offers 12 ETFs, nearly $350 million in assets. They launched their first ETFs back in July of 2022, though Matthews Asia has been around for well over 30 years. This is certainly no newcomer to the investment arena. And Andrew is now joining me from San Francisco. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so we're going to focus our discussion primarily on China, but I thought it might be good to first have you just tell us a little bit more about Matthews and the firm's specific expertise in Asia and emerging markets. Just give us the quick snapshot here.
Yeah, I mean, founded by Paul Matthews, longtime Asian investor, came back and saw that there was a position, particularly for U.S. investors, in a very difficult part of the world to analyze. So really, Matthews, you know, based in San Francisco, looking to provide investors access to, like you said, Asia and emerging markets, specializing in equities, trying to fulfill people's needs in what is a little bit more of a tricky, sort of nuanced part of the world that involves many different geographies under different stages of development.
And as I noted, Matthews has now been involved in the ETF space for nearly 2 years. Can you tell us anything more about that move and the decision to embrace the ETF wrapper?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the trend of the times is to provide investors with easy liquidity, easy access. And again, you know, in Asia, people are looking for that certainty when it comes to liquidity and when it comes to access. As an alternative form of distribution that people can readily accept alongside our mutual fund platform. The business has evolved into providing, like you said, 12 different ETFs covering different regions, different parts of Asia and emerging markets.
Yeah, so with those 12 ETFs overall, that does now include the recently launched Discovery Active ETF suite. So those two ETFs launched in January. I'd love to hear more about that suite specifically, because I think that'll get us down the path towards discussing China.
Yeah, particularly, again, in Asian markets, there's also opportunities in the small mid-cap space. But again, as you go down the market cap range, liquidity, again, becomes an even more important issue. So providing people with our emerging market, Discovery ETF, the China, Discovery ETF, which I manage with Winnie Chuang, provides access to people in what is an ever-changing area within the geography of Asian emerging markets when it comes to small and medium-sized businesses, where a lot of the innovative or new and interesting companies position themselves, certainly as they start to grow initially.
The China ETF, again, that's the Matthews China Discovery Active ETF, ticker MCHS. I think this, again, is a good segue to get us into discussing China. And I mentioned this at the top, Andrew. My sense is a lot of investors are struggling with how to approach China right now, because you do have the world's second largest economy, but there are a lot of fear headlines around things like China's property market and the banking system, and certainly geopolitical concerns. I would probably toss in demographics as well, which don't necessarily look so good. So just at a high level, is China still an investable market right now, given everything that's going on?
Yeah, it's reasonable for people to, again, in an area of the market where U.S. investors aren't as familiar with, to have these question marks. Doing it for 24 years, there has been question marks over China. Really, for the first 15 years of my career, it was all about the sustainability of the Chinese economic business model. We sort of seemed to get over the top of that, and China, by all intents and purposes, has been successful in terms of its development process. But there has been issues, a lot of issues along the way, whether it's local government financial vehicle debt. You mentioned the property market is one of the big concerns that people have today. But what I would say to people there is that, a lot of reform has already taken place. I think from a policy perspective, maybe they've been a little bit too heavy-handed. But it's well within their power to, slightly reverse course. I think structurally it's the right thing to be doing. They're looking to develop the more service side of their economy. The excessive purchasing of property that had been going on in China needed to come to an end. So I think structurally it's sound. I think there's issues short term regarding sentiment in the property market. As you've mentioned, there's other issues, demographics, albeit that's a medium to long term issue. I think the workforce in China doesn't really top out in terms of the number of people for another 5 years, but it's another valid concern that people have. And then obviously we come to geopolitics, which is forever a moving target. But what I would say to people is that China is an essential part of global supply chains. Most of its drivers now are domestically orientated, doesn't rely on exports for growth. So I think there's as many uncertainties that people have, I think that also needs to be weighed against, really the medium to long-term positive structural developments that are going on in China today.
When you think about some of those positive developments, I'm curious what you think about specific investment opportunities in China, because clearly with what you just described there, you believe China is still investable overall. But if we get more granular here, which areas do you think offer the best investment opportunities at the moment in terms of sectors or industries? Again, just getting a bit more granular.
Yeah, and a great question, because that's where it becomes even more interesting. We talk about all these top-down issues, but you know, as I've seen that Chinese stock market evolve to where it is today, it's very relatable to what U.S. investors can see in their own stock markets. You know, there is the Spotify of China. You know, there is the Uber of China. There is the Amazon of China. And you go down at the same types of businesses that exist in the U.S. today that dominate the market also now exist in China. So it becomes, I think, from a stock perspective, a lot more relatable for investors. And I think the quality of company being more consumption-orientated, we're starting to see the emergence of a lot more service-orientated companies, particularly, you know, restaurants and travel. Like I said, you know, taxi services, et cetera. So these types of companies are also emerging. So I think there's a lot of exciting areas to invest in. But, you know, if I had to highlight, you know, a couple of areas, I'd say, you know, travel-related companies are coming to the fore. You've seen very good numbers when it comes to travel coming out of Chinese New Year. And just generally service-orientated companies. And services are many, many different areas. And so we're really focused on, you know, that next evolution of Chinese company into, you know, where they're going from a development perspective, which is services, consumption-related, economic growth.
Yeah, and I'm curious, we briefly talked about the China Discovery Active ETF, again, ticker MCHS. If we go back to that, how do you think that fits in an investor's portfolio? Is that a complement to, say, broad emerging market exposure? Or how do you view that in the context of a portfolio?
Yeah, I think people use, you know, China first as an additional allocation in the U.S. to what is a core emerging market allocation. What we're also seeing is that people understanding the relevance and importance of China actually pulling it out of the emerging market bucket and investing it in it on the side. So EM ex China and then a China allocation. Yeah, and part of that, either as a bolt-on to your existing emerging market allocation or separating it completely, that's where the China Discovery ETF comes in, because it does provide you a little bit more diversity when it comes to the China exposure that you have. In, you know, either of those two ways. And I think, again, you know, your core China allocation, if you want to split it out from emerging markets, it's nice to have a bit of exposure to that small, medium-sized part of the market where, you know, there is a lot of opportunity and different types of opportunity. You know, in the Chinese stock market today, there's 2,400 companies, over $1 billion market cap. So, you know, getting some exposure in that small mid area, I think, is how people, you know, use that Discovery ETF.
Andrew, just a few minutes left here. If we sort of pull this all together, obviously we were talking earlier about whether China was still investable, and I thought you did a great job of laying out why it is longer term. But what's your overall outlook for China moving forward? That, you know, if we do have these positive longer term developments, I think people can understand that, but what are some key areas that you're watching, some more specific areas?
Yeah, I'd highlight one, and that's the property market. I, you know, mentioned it at the start. I think the sentiment effects of the property market on overall broad Chinese consumption is meaningful. And I think when you've seen, you know, not great price declines, but marginal price declines now that have been going on since September 2021, you know, it really is that turning factor, not just because property is a big part of corporates or that composition of the stock market itself, but also it has its secondary and third derivative impacts on broad consumer sentiment, particularly in the large cities in China at the moment, who are going through, you know, the majority of the price declines when it comes to housing prices. So if I had to highlight one area in terms of outlook and what we're looking for, you know, as a turning point, it's really Chinese property market clearing, and then the second and third derivatives in terms of consumer sentiment picking up on the back of that.
Well, Andrew, a pleasure having you on the podcast. Really enjoyed the conversation. Best of luck to you and the entire Matthews Asia team as you continue building out the ETF lineup. Thank you for joining me.
Yep. Thank you very much for your time.
That was Andrew Mattock, Portfolio Manager at Matthews Asia. That'll do it for this week's ETF Prime. Next week, two more great guests for you. I'll first be joined by Felix Tabari, who's co-founder of Troop. They're an artificial intelligence-enabled proxy advisor, so they help asset managers with proxy voting, which I'm really interested to dive into that topic, especially when you think about the various ESG angles there. And then I'll also be joined by Alpha Architects' Jess Bost, who's going to cover a number of topics, including some considerations when building ETF model portfolios. Until then, have a great week, everyone.